The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
And by the way, I'm going to get to the Lakers in a second. And I'm going to talk about this at the end of the hour. But Joe Morgan, who passed away today, it's not just that he's a Hall of Famer. He's an All-Star. He won some World Series. He's the greatest second baseman in the history of baseball, clearly. I had people hit me up on Twitter. What about Rogers Hornsby? They're taking guys from 100 years ago because they had eye-popping stats. When you adjust the numbers for their era, just to get, and I'm going to go right to the Lakers, but I'm a baseball fan. So Joe Morgan, in his best seasons, was 30% better than the next best player in baseball. 30% better. Like wins above replacement, stuff like that. 30% better than the next best player. He would like lead the league in on-base percentage by 40 points and lead the league in slugging percentage too 1 year. 75 or 76, I forgot which one. And steal 60 bases and almost never get caught and win the Gold Glove and the World Series. Like, this dude was different. And in a depressed hitting era, this guy was putting up juice ball numbers. He was 5'7". Just an unbelievably great player. Imagine if Ricky Henderson batted from the left side and threw from the right side so he could play second base and was winning Gold Gloves. That's like practically Joe Morgan. Kids out there listening going, who the hell is Ricky Henderson? I don't have time for this right now. We got a lot to do. We have the mayor of Los Angeles. Mayor Garcetti is going to join us in a little while. Join us. Who's there? I'm sitting here by myself. Join me! And he deserves it. Presiding over this glorious Lakers beginning of a dynasty. By the way, it really is. It's going to be the beginning of a dynasty, and I'll tell you why. History of the NBA. When two top five players, but especially when the best player in the world is joined by another top five player, and John Ireland made a good case, maybe the second best player in the world. They almost always win the championship. Almost always. I thought they weren't going to do it this year because they were thrown together, right? Like, even the added pieces, Dwight Howard, Rondo, these kind of guys, they didn't look exactly like they fit very well, and they had all this cap space waiting for Kawhi. When Kawhi left them at the altar, they had to quickly spend on whoever was left. There weren't a lot of guys left. Here, $10 million for Danny Green, whoever else you could get. I thought, usually if you throw a team together like that, as we saw with LeBron in Miami, that first year you get close, but you got to, since you've used all those resources and draft capital in order to get that superstar, that second superstar in there, you then have to rebuild a little and figure out and tweak the roster, and then the following year you win the championship. But I was overthinking it. Other people were like, come on, two top five players in the world. It's the best combination. Look. KD and Steph were two of the best five players in the world. They played together for two seasons. They won two championships. Kobe and Shaq were two of the best five players in the world. Really, the top two players in the world. They won three straight championships. Jordan and Pippen were two of the best five players in the world. Jordan was the best and Pippen was the top five player. They were six for, like, every time they had a realistic chance to go to the finals. They won in under seven games, 6-6. Magic and Kareem, certainly two of the top five players. They won five championships. Bird and McHale, two top five players. You want to say McHale was top 10? McHale was great. I would argue top five in his best seasons. They won three championships. This is what happens. LeBron and AD. Are they the two best? Are they two of the top five? LeBron's the best. Where does AD fit in? I was overthinking it. It didn't take them any extra time. They romped through the Western Conference. True, the Warriors weren't there, but 4-1, 4-1, 4-1, that's gentlemen sweeping the Western Conference. I thought the West was supposed to be tough for LeBron. And LeBron is showing no real signs of slowing. In fact, he had his most consistent defensive regular season since he left Miami, I thought, and still had gas in the tank for the postseason. And because he's playing with AD, he doesn't have to carry as much load as he used to, in fact. LeBron could win next year, could win the year after. By the way, as the best player on the team, as an MVP caliber player, but even as he declines, if he can stay healthy, LeBron, he doesn't even have to be an elite player, can still be part of a championship mix in L.A. Why not? Welcome in now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, the mayor of Los Angeles. Mayor Eric Garcetti, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey,
Mr.
Matt,
Mayor, are you there? There you go. I'm doing very well. Maybe not as good as you today. How's it feel to preside over this glorious return of Lakers dominance?
It is incredible. It was one of those magical, only in L.A. nights on a year where we needed it more than ever before. It was just the glory we've been waiting for a decade.
Why did you need it on this during this year in L.A. more than ever before, Mr. Mayor?
Well, you know, this year started out with tragedy, with loss. I think that Kobe's death reminded us, I mean, as a father of a little girl, it just hit something universal for all of us and reminded us of how much the Lakers are a spiritual center of Los Angeles. And the loss of Kobe, you know, one of those pillars, of his daughter, of the other folks that were there, it just started a tough year out. And then, boom, you know, 2 months later is when the pandemic hit and we were suddenly stuck at home. We've had economic downturn, you know, the marches for racial justice, the hottest days ever recorded. I mean, it's like plague after plague after plague. And then finally, this is like the clouds lifting, you know, a moment to feel who we are and why this is the best sports town in the world and how L.A. really always finds its strength. You know, we summon that strength at moments we need it. And the Lakers, those guys certainly showed it to us last night.
They certainly did. You know, I don't drop my daughter off at basketball practice back then. Steady Buckets, a skills development program in New York. I brought my eldest daughter to basketball practice. She's 11. And the day we found out about Kobe and Gianna, and the whole gym was stunned. A lot of fathers and daughters there. And to have this happen now, on the first in the first finals played since then, for the Lakers, a postseason that the Lakers dedicated to Kobe and Gianna, on National Father-Daughter Day, they win for the first time in a decade. How fitting a tribute.
It was meant to happen. I think for every dad out there, for every daughter who's gone through this year, for every human being who's just suffered and lost this year, you know, I've had people who I've lost in my family to COVID-19. We all have neighbors and friends. We've seen, you know, though, what sports can do and what basketball can do and what the Lakers do to bring us together in this town. And, you know, it's an amazing October. I mean, you've got basketball in October. You've got the Dodgers in the championship series, you know, hopefully on their way to greatness this year, too. It was exactly the oxygen that we needed in a year where we've all felt, you know, that this has just been the toughest of toughest years. And, you know, it's also, I think, a great harbinger of what's to come in this town that, you know, the Lakers, you can never count them out. You stick to what you know, but you bring new talent. It's kind of a metaphor for our city. It always attracts the hardest working, most brilliant people. Whether you're lucky enough like me to be born here or smart enough to move here, we're not perfect. We're an imperfect paradise. We've got our challenges, and we always have to address them. But I've seen that same strength the Lakers had last night in the people of L.A. this year, and that's what made it all even more fitting, and hopefully it'll be one of those that goes down the history book. 17 seasons for LeBron, 17th win for us, and I sure hope we see the Celtics next year so we can settle who's the best ever.
I think we all know who the best ever is.
exactly.
Mayor Eric Garcetti, mayor of Los Angeles, joining me, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. You were talking about L.A. as a sports town. Mr. Mayor, I was there for 6 years, and what struck me about L.A. is it's diverse but not integrated. Even if you go to certain parks, when you see a lot of, you see every nationality, race and nationality represented in the park, but not always together. This one's in this pocket, this one's in this pocket. And it's also an economically segregated city, very wealthy. There's also extreme poverty and everything in between. But there, it's a series of neighborhoods who don't always have to interact. In my experience, what makes L.A. a city where every walk of life comes together in the same physical space with the same interests are Lakers games more than anything else. Dodgers games, too. But Lakers games is where you see everyone together. And it seems to unite L.A. literally in a way, physically, that nothing else quite does. Can you expound upon your thoughts of L.A. as a sports town?
Well, I think you're right. That's the LA I grew up with. Certainly, it was kind of cut off, but it's now probably the most diverse city, not just in the world today, but in human history. I mean, we've got dozens of countries whose biggest population outside the home country is here in LA. I mean, it's the second biggest city of people of Mexican descent, including all the Mexican cities, Thailand, Armenia. I mean, you can go straight through and always find something that's familiar. But I think that is breaking down. There's still economic segregation, but the Lakers kind of led the way. There are those things that unite us. And when you enter Staples, you're cheering for L.A., period. You know, you can't have Lakers. You can't spell Lakers without L.A. And we know that here, not is it just the Lakers, but it's Lakers and Clippers. You've got the Sparks. You've got Dodgers, two great soccer teams. The Rams are winning. The Chargers are here. You know, you have an incredible sports town, and you've got the Olympics coming. For the first time, the Summer Games, I worked really hard on this. My first thing that I did when I was mayor was to reach out because I saw the idealism of sports. I saw how it united people globally when I was a kid growing up here in the 84 Olympics. And so in 2028, we'll have our first Paralympic Games and our third Olympic Games here in LA. We've got a couple Super Bowls. We've got, you know, the World Cup coming, the Women's World Cup, knock on wood. I mean, we're going to see probably an extraordinary stretch, a decade of sports events in LA, more concentrated than anywhere in the world. But we also have the teams that can win those championships, as we showed last night.
Look at you. You know, it just occurred to me. You could do a list of sports mayors, right? So, like, what have you accomplished in sports as mayor of a town? Under your administration, the Rams came back. Not only that, they played in a Super Bowl. The Rams were really the heritage team in town. I mean, I know the Raiders are maybe the most popular. Rams are heritage. Look at the Dodgers now, maybe on the precipice, finally, of a World Series. What else? We got rid of all the bad owners, right? McCourt's gone, and obviously Donald Sterling's gone, and look what we have in place in L.A. And now this, the Lakers finally return to glory. Are you the greatest sports mayor in the land?
No, I would never.
Is that your ambition?
You know, I have a rivalry with Marty Walsh, my good friend, who's the mayor of Boston, and he would never bet me because he said, whenever I bet, I lose. So it was like his curse on me. So last year, I bet him before he could bet me with the Red Sox, and we did better than them last year. But he's had a good stretch, too, in the last few years. But L.A. is ready to claim the crown, and we are poised not just to win championships but to host the greatest sports events in the world. And people forget, you know, it's about that glory, but it's also about – you know, I remember with my dad going to the Rams for a Super Bowl when I was a kid. We got to recreate that, you know, last year when we went to Atlanta. I got to celebrate with my daughter. I taped her. She's 8 years old. I taped her last night after or just as we were winning. So she would have a video years from now of the first of many, hopefully, Laker championships she'll experience. And my dad was in the same room, and we were talking about when I remembered Magic and Kareem in the first one. So this is something that is, you know, not just about me or about any of us who help bring sports here. It's about an entire town. And L.A. always gets a bad rap, like, oh, you guys don't care about sports. You've got so many teams. You've got Hollywood. We're fanatics here, and we proved it. And last night, this town was celebrating.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I have to let you go. But before I do, I just want to let you know, you can't be resting on your laurels. I would just like to remind you, there are babies born in Los Angeles over 10 hours old right now who've never seen the Lakers win a championship. 10 hours, Mr. Mayor.
We
have
ready.
To. You got to get right back to work.
We are ready to start practicing. The season starts right away.
The players deserve
some time with family. We'll celebrate somehow here in the city in a safe way. And then back to work because we want to get a repeat.
Excellent. Before I let you go, can you admit that you're happy that the Lakers won and not the Clippers? Come on. LA's a Lakers town. I need to get you on the record.
But it is a Lakers town. I'm Lakers till the day I die. I am so happy. Forget it as mayor. This was one of the happiest nights of my life last night.
There you go. The great Mayor Eric Garcetti, Mayor of Los Angeles. Thank you for coming on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. You can also see it on ESPN News. And that was, hey, can I do the Dr. Pepper call-in line for Mayor Garcetti? No, I have to only do it for, like, a caller. Oh, we got Primo on the line?
Dude, we got an LA legend on the line, man.
Pardon me. Primo's on the line from an undisclosed location, I'm sure. Go ahead, Primo.
Well, buenos dias. This is the home of champions, Los Angeles. I'm telling you, I'm so happy last night. I got to tell the truth, though. as much as I'm a good basketball fan, I recognize the talent, skill level, the endurance, the health conditioning of LeBron James. But, you know, when he came and the big folks were trying to get him here, they put him on a platform as the king is coming and that. But being here in L.A. so much, so long, I thought, I realize all the good things, but I looked at LeBron as a disciple of God. Not
a disciple of God. Go ahead. Read on.
A disciple, because we've had so many. We've had Magic and Kareem and Jerry West and Kobe and Worthy. And so, but I really felt like LeBron became Shaq and Wilt. Oh, God forgive me.
I mean, you give a list of Lakers greats, you leave off Shaq and Wilt?
Is that crazy? That's because I'm talking so fast, because you can't leave them. Wilt may have been the greatest athlete in the history of any sport.
And Shaq, not on the Lakers' Mount Rushmore. Primo, Shaq, usually by now you're knee-deep in a story, a tangent that I can't even figure out how it relates to the main subject. What have you been up to since I've left Los Angeles, Primo?
Well, I don't want to, but listen, I want to say to you that the Dodgers, I know we're talking Lakers, but that's great. But please let me get this out. Uh-huh. With all the things going on, we can't take the World Series trophy away from Houston. We can't make new rings and all that.
Why not?
But I'm thinking the commissioner should have said, hey, if the Houston Astros or the Boston Red Sox win the American League pennant, then make it mandatory that they have to play a 5-game series against the Dodgers before thinking about going to the World Series.
Now, listen, Primo, that's just crazy talk. I say take away the championship. That's right. Take it away.
Well, that's kind of hard. And then you got all the other knucklehead people, all the good people who don't want to rock the boat, making waves and stuff.
Primo, I miss you, but this is your most boring call I've ever heard out of you. Usually you have a scintillating call. What was this about? No crazy talk, no crazy tangents, no stories. Usually Primo has a story from like 1976. You're like, what does this have to do with anything? But somehow he ties it in. Nothing out of Primo today. Primo, just because I've been out of town for a while doesn't mean you get to slide with a call like that. Rod, you make sure to get Primo back on, and I want him coming with his A material next time.
We'll make sure. I think next time be ready. It was just a warm-up. This is preseason for Primo. You've been gone for 6 years, Max.
He starts talking to me about the Dodgers. We're talking about the Lakers. They just won the championship. I guess the Dodgers might be about to do the same thing. Can you imagine? News from Max Kellerman Nation. Primo just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. I don't know what he was talking about. He said LeBron's a disciple of God, and that the Dodgers should have to host the Astros in a best of five. Yeah, I don't know. What was Primo talking about today? Oh, L.A.'s an easy place to miss, boy. Those were some good days. You know, and especially, Raj, when the weather starts turning like it's pouring in New York right now. Pouring!
Oh, man, it's 80 degrees out here, man. I'm like, Wednesday I'm going to the beach after the show, and you know how it is, man. We're good.
I wasn't going to leave L.A. for anything, Raj. Not money or anything. But they gave me a whole lot of money.
That's real tough.
Money by itself. No, money by itself, not enough, but a whole lot of money. I got to go. I've always said, L.A., Raj, embraced me as a true son of the town, and I think that kind of embrace and trust and loyalty should be reciprocated, and I was always going to live out my days in sunny Los Angeles watching my Lakers. But the only thing that would have had me leave, really, is if anyone anywhere offered me one half a red halfpenny more, then I was going to have to leave, and that's what happened. But it's too bad that it did. Wild NFL weekend, Raj. I don't know if you noticed that. Can the Raiders actually challenge the Chiefs over the long haul for this season? Can they come out of that division?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Michael Thomas ruled out tonight. Had a fight with a teammate. No Michael Thomas for the Saints. By the way, the Saints offense has not looked the same without him. You would think, like, they got Emmanuel Sanders, they got Kamara, they got some guys, Drew Brees still, but The thing about Emmanuel Sanders, who's a good receiver still, at least up until this year, he's been very good. Flying a little under the radar, actually. By the way, if he gets hit with the pass by Jimmy G in last year's Super Bowl, he's a Super Bowl hero, right? One of them. Super Bowl champ. But anyway, he's been a good receiver on several teams for a long time. The whole point about Emmanuel Sanders was as a number two receiver, which is just what the Saints were missing. Kamara was really their second best receiver. You know, out of the backfield, their second best receiver. But and Michael Thomas is all world. But they didn't really have that legit number two receiver. On paper, at least, that's Emmanuel Sanders. But when you take Michael Thomas away, he's miscast as a number one. That's a big... And by the way, the Chargers, like, let's not forget, a couple of years ago, Justin Herbert was the presumptive number one overall pick. Like, that year, I remember because the Giants stuck. Maybe the Giants can have the worst record in the league and draft Justin Herbert. And then it didn't exactly turn out that way. Although, I think what we're seeing in recent years is a lot of times a guy puts up great numbers as a freshman or a sophomore, and then everyone's expecting more the following year. And then there's a little regression that takes place as the league kind of adapts to him. But then, ultimately, you see a couple years later what they got. Justin Herbert's really good. And the Chargers' defense is good. This whole week, by the way, this whole slate of games, it didn't look great on paper going into it. But damn, the Raiders pulling off the upset. Raiders upsetting the Chiefs. By the way, the Monday Night Football is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs. For protection on the road and on the water, see how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers won the game. The same way, like, Miami was losing some games this year, but you go, there's something different about them this year. Even before Tua, without Tua, you're like, nah, this is... I took the defense in DraftKings. Gave me 12 points, Raj, for $2,400. $2,400 DraftKings dollars, that is.
Yeah, yeah. 12
Not
points?
Bad.
You got the fire? Did you get the fire symbol?
I did. I got the fire symbol.
Ah, good yeah. For you.
But anyway, like that's the Chargers remind me of that kind of team. Whatever their record's going to be, that's a sneaky kind of solid and getting better team in a lot of ways with a bright young quarterback. Anyway, as a slate of games, you looked at this last week, you're like, all right, that's all right, whatever. There aren't a whole bunch of compelling matchups, but I'll tell you what, when the Raiders beat the Chiefs, when they do it with Derek Carr throwing the ball down the field and the Raiders defense not having to bring extra guys to get pressure, when you have a divisional rivalry with one team considered this is the best team in football and the other team like, okay, like as usual, they're better than they were. They won't be as good as we hope they're going to be. And then the quarterback has a game like Derek Carr had and the defense has that kind of game where you don't have to bring extra guys to get pressure on Mahomes. All of a sudden, that whole slate of games got more interesting, didn't it? But all of a sudden, the division got more interesting. Derek Carr, who I will remind you, Raj, every time his name comes up, maybe not every time, but wanted to fight me in the octagon because Ooh. I said he looked like he quit on the Raiders a couple years ago.
Yeah, wait, what kind of shorts were you going to wear?
Get in the octagon. But anyway, he early in his career looked like a real ascending young star. And then he kind of plateaued for a while as something less than that and on a not so great team. He looked bad to me. I don't, you know, like that's what I saw. Looked like he quit on the team. He said that gets to his questioning his heart and da-da-da, tough. Like, that's what happens in a full-contact sport. People are going to make inferences based on your play and body language. And by the way, a lot of times they'll be wrong. And maybe I was wrong, but that's what I saw at the time. And even looking back on it, it's not like I go, well, I must have been wrong. Maybe I was, but I didn't feel that way at the time. That's what it looked like to me. Body language and results. By the way, I also think, like, I saw Eli quit on the Giants at times. Not over the long haul, but there was a season late in his career a couple years ago where I was like, boy, Eli's not going to get killed behind this offensive line to wind up in third place in the division. Like, and neither would I. Anyway, and Eli's as tough as it gets and a two-time Super Bowl MVP and champion. But Derek Carr looked good. And let's be honest, he outplayed Patrick Mahomes yesterday. Think about that for a second. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Joe Morgan passed away. Last Take is coming up.
Max, the podcast.
So I've been talking a lot about the Lakers today. We've been doing a little football, too. I want to talk about Joe Morgan. I did a little bit. Like, to be the greatest ever at a position in Major League Baseball, the sport goes back, at this point, over 120 years. Pranay in San Francisco. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hello, Max. Sorry, if you were wanted to talk about Joe Morgan, Go ahead,
Pranay.
Okay. So I was just thinking about the West next year, and what are you hearing the Warriors will do with the draft pick they have? And what do you think is the best move they can make to compete with who almost seem like a juggernaut in the Lakers?
I think the Warriors have a big move planned. I don't know what it is. I do not see them sitting on a draft pick. And Wiggins, by the way, like, you think about Andrew Wiggins, he's athletic, but he's not a great player. And like, the Warriors were great, but not good enough to really beat LeBron. The first time they beat LeBron, LeBron didn't have Kyrie or Kevin Love. They were both hurt, and he still took them six games. They knew they needed more than just a prime Steph, Clay, Dre, and a still great Iguodala. That was a whole lot, and it still wasn't enough to get by LeBron. So I don't think that a kind of recuperating Steph and Clay with an older Draymond and no Iguodala, Wiggins instead, that ain't going to get it done, and I don't think that that's what they're planning. I think the Warriors are going to reload and do it in a devastating way would be my prediction. Let's see what LeBron does then. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Pranay just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
So as I was saying, I was saddened to learn that Joe Morgan passed away. He was an ESPN broadcaster for years, but we never really interacted. Interacted with his, I'm trying to remember what his daughter did or does for ESPN, but I ran into her at LAPC in LA I didn't know it at first, and she told me that Joe Morgan was her father. Like, Joe, the greatest second baseman who ever lived is your dad. He was, like, as I was saying, baseball has been around now on the major league level for well over 120 years. What is it now? 130 something years? And to be the best ever at your position, realize there haven't always been 30 teams. But in the major leagues, there have been, you know, dozens of teams every year. So think about the odds that you're the best who ever did it at your position. Like, let me give you an example. What kind of category this puts Joe Morgan into? Who's the greatest, like, center fielder is of all time? Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays? The greatest, you know, left fielder of all time? Ted Williams or Barry Bonds? That's Joe Morgan. And it's not just, well, he's a second baseman. It was a more important defensive position. And he was a Gold Glove caliber player. Won it like five times, the Gold Glove. Was a back-to-back MVP. Not coincidentally, when he was in his absolute prime and winning back-to-back MVPs, that's when the Reds won back-to-back World Series. Remember, they were the dynasty, the big red machine. But if anything, it seemed like they underachieved a little bit considering how many great players they had. Johnny Bench, arguably the greatest catcher ever. Tony Perez, Hall of Famer, playing first base, had moved over from third to first as his career went on. Joe Morgan, playing second base. Pete Rose played all over, but third base during the dynasty years. Concepcion was probably the best shortstop in the game when he played shortstop for them. George fought like an outfield. Cesar Geronimo was the worst player in the outfield. He was an excellent player. Defensive center fielder who was a good offensive player. Ken Griffey Sr., was an all-star. And George Foster, for a couple years, was the best slugger in the game. The only guy to hit 50 home runs, hit 52 home runs between the 60s and Cecil Fielder in the 90s. Only guy to do it was George Foster. It was a devastating team. But when Joe Morgan was in his prime, they won back-to-back World Series, and he won back-to-back MVPs. And it's not just by a little bit. He was, in 75 and 76, he was on average, I would say, like 20% better than the next best player in Major League Baseball. What? He wouldn't lead the league in on base by like 10 points. It'd be like 40 points while stealing 60-plus bases and almost never getting caught and winning the gold glove. Doing it with power. I'll do this off the top of my head. I want to say Joe Morgan, it was in his best, in those two seasons, he had one season where he hit 17. The next year he hit 27 home runs. He stole over 50 or 60 bases each year. One of those years he hit 320-something, and I don't remember the other year, but I remember his on-base percentage being so, like, gaudy. So much better than the next best guy. Rod Carew or whoever. Like, way better than them. But all, and one of those years, he also led the league in slugging percentage. A little 5'7" second baseman. Led the league in on-base and slugging by a lot. Like, this dude was something else, and led his team to championships. Greatest in the history of the game. Had people hit me up. Rogers Hornsby hit 400. Yeah, but when you adjust for the era, in fact, Morgan was the more dominant player. Ryan Sandberg was great. Ryan Sandberg was great. Morgan was better. And in recent years, Alomar was great. Not Joe Morgan. Or Altuve. Can you imagine if Joe Morgan knew the pitches that were coming? If he was all wired up, what he would have done? He might have hit 400. Chase Utley was great, had a couple years there, but not Joe Morgan. Very sad to learn of his passing. He's one of the greatest players who ever lived. Not just a normal Hall of Famer. This was different. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. I'll be back tomorrow. I'd like to thank Eric Garcetti, the mayor of New York. And most of all, I think Los Angeles in particular today should be thanking me for reverse jinxing the Lakers by taking the Clippers. I did it on purpose. We did it!
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.